This video is especially personal to me. In February of this year, I attended the Monerotopia Conference in Mexico City, where I was a speaker along with Derek Bros, Ray Youssef, and a couple dozen other privacy and crypto experts. At 5:10 p.m. on the first day of the conference, Ray Youssef, an American citizen from New York, gave a presentation entitled Financial Privacy, a Fundamental Right. At the end of his 45-minute presentation, he was surrounded by approximately 20 Mexican law enforcement officers who took him into custody and deported him back to the United States, where he was indicted on charges related to money laundering. I will be the first to admit I do not know if Ray is guilty of anything. At the time of this recording, he is at home awaiting trial for what he claims was $300 of Bitcoin purchased 4 years prior to his arrest. I don't claim to be smarter than the FBI director. Not publicly, at least. But if I wanted to arrest Ray with the least possible risk to my agents, I would have taken him into custody at the airport after he had gone through security, and I knew for sure he was unarmed. Given that the charges against him were filed more than 2 months before he flew to Mexico, and the FBI obviously knew he was going to Mexico when he purchased his plane ticket, why did they wait until he was in Mexico to have him taken into custody? I believe they wanted to arrest him right in front of me and all the other speakers and attendees at Monerotopia to make the point, this could have been you. As I said, I don't know if Ray is guilty of money laundering or anything related to money laundering, but one thing I know for certain is I am sick and tired of the multi-tiered justice system demonstrated by the selective enforcement of laws. It seems when the ruling elite do incredibly questionable things, nobody in power even wants to investigate them. But when non-elites do anything questionable, such as writing software to help protect people's financial privacy, the FBI likes to send a message by parking an armored vehicle on their front lawn while raiding their home with 40-plus heavily armed agents. I recently traveled to Pittsburgh to speak with Keone Rodriguez's wife, Lauren, about the day that happened to them. A couple of quick announcements before I play that video. I paid for all of my own expenses traveling to Pittsburgh for this interview out of my own pocket. If you would like to help support my independent citizen journalism on this channel, I invite you to buy me a coffee or join my Patreon, where I post additional content that I cannot put on YouTube. Also, I am again teaming up with Gabriel and Urban from Escape the Technocracy to offer a live 3-hour webinar on how to use AI in a privacy-focused way to enhance your capabilities and productivity. And finally, I have several public speaking events coming up over the next few months, including my 16-state Western tour from July 16th through August 11th. Visit brushfirestour.com for details.
I'm Dr. John Padfield, and joining me today is Lauren Rodriguez. Her husband, Keone, was the CEO of Samurai Wallet. He is currently serving time in federal prison, and this interview will cover the raid on their home and the subsequent legal ordeal that he went through. Lauren, thank you so much for taking time to talk with me today.
Hi, John. Thank you so much for having me on.
You're very welcome. Can you, let's start with the legal charge and then we'll get into what happened the day of the raid. What was your husband accused of? And if you could just share with my audience the chain of events that led to him being arrested.
Sure. So Samurai Wallet was a non-custodial open source Bitcoin wallet. They were in operation for 10 years. You could download it, you know, from Google Play and various other things. How it worked was with Bitcoin being an open ledger, means anyone with an internet connection can, they have a starting point, kind of trace and see everything about your financial status, your history, who you pay, you know, your net worth potentially. And so what Samurai Wallet did is had some added features which allowed some transactional privacy like you would expect from kind of the legacy banking system. So on April 24th, 2024, pre-dawn raid, our home was raided, and we found out that after the fact that his business partner, founder, and CTO, Bill Hill, home was also raided in Portugal, a simultaneous coordinated international raid. The charges were two conspiracy counts, conspiracy to operate an unlicensed money transmitter business, and conspiracy to money launder.
And I'm assuming your husband had no criminal record prior to this?
Nope, none at all. There may have been a speeding ticket, but that would have even been long such past.
An infraction, not even a misdemeanor.
Yes, yes.
And I did not go back and look up the exact details in the media, but I'm going to make a prediction just based on the way these things go. There was probably overwhelming presence of force when they're going to take someone into custody that is not violent and has no criminal record.
Yeah, my initial reaction, again, it was pre-dawn, we were woken up, actually our dog barked because our house was surrounded. There was an MRAP, there were maybe 40, 50 armed HRT, FBI HRT agents, the night vision. When we were told to come out, we had multiple laser sights from rifles pointed at our hearts. They flew a drone through the front door. My initial reaction was they must have the wrong house, right? We hear this mm-hmm. happens, that they're trying to hit a meth lab and hit the sweet grandmother next door. And that, I mean, that's, 'cause why else? What could possibly be the response for all these people showing mm-hmm. up? And we found no, in fact, they came to our house to arrest my husband.
Okay, 40 to 50 agents, heavily armed, body armor, assault rifles. I'm familiar with what an MRAP is, but for anyone in my audience that's not, can you describe what the MRAP is?
It's a militarized armored vehicle. This one had a crane on it that lifted up, with the lights. It's something you would expect to see in a war zone.
I'm old enough to remember the raid on the Branch Davidian compound in Waco, Texas, and what most civilians referred to as a tank, because at a distance it looks like a tank.
Yeah.
And I remember the Attorney General at the time, Janet Reno, arguing, no, that's not a tank at all, that's more like a rental car. She used that word under oath, it was more like a rental car. I've never in my life gone into Enterprise or Avis and seen anything remotely like that.
Be interested to rent one and drive one around.
Yeah,
that's shocking.
So there were initially two charges against your husband, and I have seen this over and over with other cases where the feds will have a really long-term charge, 20 plus years if you're convicted, and then a lesser charge, and they strike a plea deal, and I'm assuming that's what happened. I know that your husband did plead guilty to one charge, but I'm guessing that was based on the likelihood of winning and facing a much more severe charge had he not took a plea.
Yeah, so initially, when we got these charges and there are two conspiracy counts, and we know that we didn't do any of them. In fact, we had legal counsel saying what you are following the law, and there was no intent to money launder, and there was no intent to be an unlicensed money transmitter business. So we were really excited to be able to prove ourselves in court. Our initial thought was kind of, well, they got this wrong, they don't understand it, it's new technology, we'll explain it, they'll drop the charges. Then when that didn't happen, we're like, okay, well, we'll prepare everything. We had a really good motion to dismiss and some amicus briefs, and in our case, even about a year into court, I've learned through this process, that how slow court processes are. Mm-hmm. And so about a year into it, we found out that the government had hid some Brady evidence, which is exculpatory evidence that could help the defense. And this evidence that they had been hiding for over a year was that they had asked FinCEN, who's the regulator in charge, mandated by Congress, in charge of money transmitting licenses, they're in charge of implementing all the bank secrecy laws, They had gone to them, these prosecutors, 6 months before indictment and asked, do you think Samurai Wallet is in violation of any of these laws? And they said no. And yet they charged anyways, they indicted anyways, and then they hid that for over a year. So again, feeling really good. We had all these different motions, and our judge at the time, Judge Berman, wanted to have one big court hearing where he would go through all of these and give us his decision. And again, over a year into the case, and we're preparing to go before him. The lawyers are ready. We're thinking it's going to be a multiple hour court hearing. It'll be our first real big ones. The other ones had been short procedural. About, I think it was 3 or 4 days before we're to appear in front of Judge Berman, he recused himself. We don't know why. And our new judge, we were provided a new judge, and Judge Denise Coates, and said, okay, you know, same thing. We'll go and the attorneys will argue the sides, and it'll be a couple hours, but, you know, still feeling good about it. And we go in front of her, and she says, good morning. I'm denying all motions. Have a good day. Wow. And didn't explain, you know, gave no reason why. And like I said, she denied the motion to dismiss. She denied any hearing on the Brady violation. And she even denied amicus briefs, which are friends of the court letters. When something's complicated, like cryptocurrencies, you can't expect a judge to be an expert in every topic that comes before them. And so this is a way for them to just be educated by a neutral party on complex topics, and she denied even having those submitted to her. So at that point we realized, yeah, there's no way we can have a fair trial. It would be like going into a fight with, you know, both hands tied behind your back. The judge is acting as a fifth prosecutor from the bench. And that's the point where the prosecution came and, like you said, offered a plea deal. And they said, if you plead to the conspiracy to operate an unlicensed money transmitter business, again, even though the regulator who gives out the license says you don't need one, and we will drop the conspiracy to money launder.
Nothing like showing up to the big game and seeing the referee wearing your opponent's jersey.
That's exactly right. That's completely how it felt.
I guess what grates on me the most, James Clapper, former director of national intelligence, can sit on television under oath in front of a Senate committee and lie directly to the faces of senators, which I believe is the definition of perjury, and nothing happens. And Secretary of Commerce Howard Lutnick can lie to a Senate committee about having never been to a certain island in the Caribbean, which we now know for absolute positive that he was at a certain island in the Caribbean, and nothing happens. You've got the evidence dead to rights. They said it on television in front of the Senate, and that's okay. And then we have the case of your husband who tried to do things right, went to the appropriate authorities asking, do I need any type of a license? They tell him no, and we're going to prosecute him anyway, even though he tried to follow the rules.
Yeah, and you know, in our case, you talk about evidence, right? The only, you know, quote unquote evidence that the prosecution had, they never had any agreements to money launder or any communications with known criminals, because there wasn't any. That was never the intent. You know, the intent of the software, like I said earlier, was to provide transactional level privacy for normal people. You know, I don't want, if I'm going to buy a coffee, the barista doesn't need to know what political causes I donate to, or, you know, how much money I give to my church, or it, like, that's just not any of their business. And that's what they were fixing with this software, or helping people. And then for them to put on these charges like it's somehow criminal to provide or help people maintain privacy, again, that we expect or should be expecting in everyday life, is, it's really sad.
I take this very personal, and so I look up to someone like your husband, and when I see what's going on with MAID, the mobile advertising ID that's built into phones so that the phone can track your app usage, it can track the gyroscope in your phone to tell where you're walking. You know, even if you have GPS turned off, it can count the steps that you're taking.
And it can do what's called dead reckoning and kind of figure out about where you are, even with GPS turned off. But with the vast amount of information being accumulated on people, as I was driving here today, I stopped and did an interview with Monero Talk. And we have invasions of privacy on every front. We have Flock cameras, we have Leonardo Signal Trace monitoring where you drive. We have Fog Data Science monitoring where your phone goes. We have Halo sensors and Flock Raven listening for keywords in public spaces in case someone says something they're not supposed to say. And then the financial privacy. And so I really admire what your husband was doing with Samurai Wallet, trying to restore some degree of privacy so that people can have private transactions. But it seems like this administration, and it's not just this administration. I try to stay out of Democrat-Republican politics. This has been going on, you know, literally since the 1920s, but especially since 9/11. It's been going on, the continual erosion and the acceleration of the erosion of any shred of privacy that we have. Turning back to your husband, I know that there is a petition to try and get a pardon for him. Can you say anything about the status of that and how any of my viewers, if they are so motivated that they could participate in this and try and get a more attention drawn to this and a pardon?
Sure, yeah, definitely. Would definitely love, you know, any support that people are willing to give. I do want to touch on one thing. So a lot of this stuff, we talked about financial privacy and how it's been eroding over the years. So the Bank Secrecy Act, which had a lot of stuff added to it, mm-hmm. after 9/11, as you say, there was a report that just came out, and it was the numbers from 2025, and it said, so compliance with the Bank Secrecy Act is about a $30 billion a year compliance cost for, mm-hmm. you know, all kinds of different banks down through. It generates over 250 million reports because, right, the number, the $10,000 number hasn't been updated since the 70s and, you know, et cetera. This huge $30 billion compliance cost, 250 million generated reports, only it led to, I think it's 257, you might have to check my numbers on that, actual investigations. And so how much fewer actual crimes in mm-hmm. that is just shocking. But if people would like to sign our petition, we're currently at a little over 16,000 signatures. You can go to billandkeone.org. That's billandkeone.org. And there you can find more information about the case if you'd like to know, because there is, you know, a lot, and as well as links to the petition and links to donate if people are willing to help with that.
When I'm editing this video, I will put that on screen, and I will also put that in the description so that anyone that wants to can go out and donate and add their names to the petition.
Thank you so much.
Oh, you're very welcome. Is there anything else other than the donation or signing the petition that might be able to help?
You know, I think people talking about it, this is a case that, like so many of these other, either privacy implications or what that is only gonna change by one person at a time, word of mouth, and the more people that are speaking about it and showing that it's something that they care about, whether it is calling their representative or, you know, or senator, or even just telling their friends and family that this is an issue and this is going on, I think that's really the only way we're gonna make a change.
I would agree with that. I do sense a rising frustration from the general public over the erosion of privacy. I've been traveling all over the country. I've been to about 14 or 15 states now, and I have 16 more states coming up between July and August. But as I travel literally all over the country, I'm seeing more and more people waking up to the slow erosion. Had it stayed a slow erosion, people might not have picked up on it, but over the last 6 to 12 months, I think especially with the rise of Flock cameras, more people are waking up saying, wait a minute, you know, this has gone too far. And so hopefully people will respond to this call for action and
assist with this situation. I'll certainly be keeping you and your husband in my prayers, and pray for a quick resolution to this and that he's able to get out well before the 5-year sentence that he was given.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you.